Welcome to the eMind Podcast with Dr. Carrie Oberbrunner, where we're committed to helping you think like an entrepreneur and gain an exponential advantage. This podcast is sponsored by Igniting Souls and Cedarville University. And now, get ready for the eMind.
Hey, I am with Dr. Jeff Heyman, and we are in the house, man. This is your office. It's a rare on-site recording. First of all, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So give us your title, because I know you do a lot of cool things.
Yeah. So I'm the dean of the Robert W. Plaster School of Business. I have the privilege of doing that. But I would say that my passion is really in the area of economics, as I'm a professor of economics. And I also get to play around in the entrepreneurship classes, which I have fun with.
Well, it's just so amazing. I feel grateful that you brought me to Cedarville. But here's the question. This is a big question. I define CNN sometimes as constant negative news.
Sure.
So as an entrepreneur, you know that we got to fortify our minds. It's very easy to be swept and swayed by the popular news.
Sure.
But you are so in tune with the economics and the trends.
Sure.
How do we balance the two as entrepreneurs?
Yeah, it's one of those things. We all want to stay abreast of things that are happening. And certainly early on in the entrepreneurial journey, a big part of what any entrepreneur is going to do is in surveying the landscape is understanding what the market might look like in the future. So, yeah, in most of your entrepreneurship textbooks, they'll have what are those big mega trends that are happening, you know, whether it be IT or now AI and cyber and Bitcoin and blockchain.
Sure.
All that. So awareness of broad trends is there. But here's the reality. Macro, you can't control it. Macro, I can't control it.
Yes.
Macro. So while we stay abreast of it, really what we typically see is it's always the micro story that wins in the end. In other words, how well you execute is going to determine whether you're a success, not whether there's some big macro trend. And if a big macro trend does have like the great financial crisis and things like that, you know, hey, life happens. You pick it up and do it all over again. So
that's
the way I think about it.
I like that. So you say be in the know of macro so you can just be relevant in the space. But what you control is the micro trend.
Yeah. I'll give you an illustration how paying attention to macro trends may help. You know that we've been involved here at Cedarville at helping, you know, some of the founding company, Christian founders get started. And one of the things I was having some discussion with some of the others right now, we had seen with the financial situation that the Fed had created these zero interest rates. That's not sustainable over long term. We know that's going to be reversed. And in the aftermath, we start asking ourselves, what happens on the other side? That's where we want to think about a macro trend that might be there. So such that I asked the question, we might want to have a bias for those startups that aren't going to need a second round of funding. If we make an investment in an early round, if they're going to need and be dependent on multiple rounds of funding, when we think liquidity and credit is going to be tighter in the future, that may be one we steer away with. So that's one of the things we do pay attention to. And founders should. You know, if you're aware that the future is going to be not as good, you may want to lock in on some funding sources early on and have your funding strategy to reflect
that.
An interesting thing. In the great financial crisis, Ford and GM and Chrysler effectively went bankrupt. Whereas Ford did not. When I say effectively, because the Obama administration did some squirrely things to change bankrupt law and give the company the unions. That's another story. But what Ford, it wasn't that Ford was run drastically better, but they had basically done a major refinancing of all their debt the year earlier.
Wow.
And that had them more fiscally postured well in that environment. Now, they didn't foresee this thing.
Yes.
So sometimes it's just, I would suggest, dumb luck.
Yeah.
But those are kinds of things where you may want to think about it.
That makes sense. You also have this amazing role with something called Beyond Network. Talk about that, because it gives you a front row seat to see what's happening in a lot of the entrepreneurial space.
Yeah. And so in our entrepreneurship program, we wanted to focus on kind of the startups, which is why I am so happy to have this Barry chair of entrepreneurship here. But beyond the students, there's the other side of that. What about the funding side? So there's a capital side as well as the business side itself. And so when we first started our entrepreneurship effort, you know, having the capacity to be able to raise up the funding for any successful ventures was pretty important. And we did that. And initially, while our startup from the students and alumni was lagging, we started opening up to basically any Christian founder. That's our minimal thing. We don't have real high doctrinal standards. Do you believe in Jesus Christ? You know, that kind of thing. Right. And so our motto was Christian funders of Christian founders. We believe that capital has a purpose and that we should be value investing with that at some level. And
just to clarify for the audience, you say that you have to believe in Jesus Christ. That is a qualifier.
Yes. For the companies that we invest in, right?
Yes.
There are many good companies that you may want to invest in that are not led by Christians, but that's not our kind of value proposition for this fund. And there's only a few angel funds that look like. And so we created what's called an angel network. An angel network is those individuals that are what's called by the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, accredited investors. And so there's less regulation on them. And we kind of did the marriage game, so to speak, to align entrepreneurs with funding by other Christians. And that was really useful for us. And I will say just that's scaled beyond the university. So it's no longer part of Cedarville University. It's its own 501c3 and its educational mission. And it partners with multiple Christian universities now and more every day. But that entity, that group, tries to go out and find Christian startups and does the standard process any good network would do. How do you get that funnel going from 100 companies down to maybe two or three at most that you're going to look at? So it's a lot of screening. And this is what's fun for our students, our finance students principally, but other students as well, can competitively be selected to be part of the venture capital analyst team.
I love it.
And they get to do what we call curate the deal flow, which allows them to be involved with startups, get to meet founders. Yeah. They get paired with an angel mentor that helps them evaluate the company to ultimately get that winnowing process down. And we're blessed. We're going to be hosting the quarterly pitch event on Friday of this week with Beyond.
But we
do. That's way for our students that maybe aren't want to be entrepreneurs themselves to get involved with the startup economy, which is the private markets are growing much faster than the public markets. And so that's an important part of what we're doing.
We just saw people buzzing behind us. This university is on fire. There's so much activity. I love it. Talk about entrepreneurship at Cedarville. I know you've been this champion for years, and we had some unfortunate key leaders pass away. Why do you feel like God's time is right now? And tell us a little of the history.
Yeah. So you know, I have a professional appreciation for the entrepreneur. I'm not an entrepreneur myself.
But you got some great hot rods.
I do. Not in the scalable sense that we typically think about for that. But in economics and free market economics, the entrepreneur is really the hero of the story. Mm. We talk about supply and demand curves all day, but somebody has to shape those curves each day. And we have entrepreneurs out in the marketplace trying to create new products, new innovations to really create demand and to make supply go where it's never done before. So the entrepreneur is the key to the system. So just intellectually, I appreciate that role, which is underappreciated in economics generally. So I'm part of the free market school and we love it. So when I got here, I wanted to make sure we had a robust program, and we created an entrepreneurship minor. We had a concentration. We had, in our management major, we'd had a fairly successful entrepreneurship program in the mid 2000s, 2006, 2007-ish. And some of those key faculty and that was before I got here, left, and it kind of withered at that point. Mm. And we tried to revitalize it. In 2018, we had a key alumni come back who had a similar passion for it. Dick Blank, who'd had years of experience as a managing partner for Accenture, where he, in that capacity, he got to see a lot of the trends. He got to see even a lot of the acquisitions that Accenture did to do. And he was involved. They had their own internal, you know, startup acquisition thing that she got involved with. So he wanted to be involved with that. And he wanted to help us get us started. He and another gentleman came, and we came up with a strategic plan focused around entrepreneurship. And that's what led ultimately to this creation we called Beyond, which is now the funding side. And we're picking up the back end of that with really and firing up the students now, which is what you're going to be a key leader. And we're seeing so much excitement amongst the students that they see the opportunity, what entrepreneurship can do for them. And really it opens up a lot more opportunities in the world. And today's right? We have a lot of students, for instance, that they want to be able to figure out how can I have a life that will align with what I want to do. If I want to have kids, if I'm a female and I want to have kids, can I have a business in my home?
Yep.
And how can we help them with that? Yep. And that's a great kind of thing to be helpful for. And it's not just so I can have an easy life. We often have students, they think, I just want to be my own boss because I don't want to have to work as hard. We quickly abuse them of that idea because every entrepreneur is going to be
work hustling hard.
60, 70 hours a week. But you have the flexibility when you're an entrepreneur. If you need to be at your kid's soccer game, you can go off and do that. That's the kind of thing that we're trying to create. And ultimately, and here's the burning passion, what we're trying to do. We look around at what's going on in the world, and we see that often now businesses are no longer straddling the fence, just trying to lay low and make money. Now we see businesses actively on the other side of gospel purposes.
Yeah, like social entrepreneurship. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Not even that yet specifically, because social entrepreneurship, typically when I think of that, we're trying to solve a social problem through kind of market forces, which is a good thing in and of itself. Yeah. But I'm just talking about the simple thing of having a business that wants to encourage people to just live well and not get involved in politically correct causes and things like that. You know, we have this broader anti-biblical agenda in the workplace now.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
So
if we can create more market leaders, as I tell our students, any entrepreneur that even 10 years out, if they have 10 employees, they're going to have more influence in their local community than the local U.S. congressman or congresswoman. Because the reality is communities look to businesses to help them solve the problems of the community. You know, if nothing else, it's going to be the name of our entrepreneur's business on the back of that Little League jersey sponsoring it, a little soccer team and so forth. Because businesses have the resources and communities look to them for leadership. And the more Christians we get in the leadership in the market, the better witness we will have and the better our culture will be. So that's the kind of missional call we have as my dean hat. For the school of business, I want more market leaders that have Christian values, that they bring that in the marketplace.
I've been so encouraged by the students. In fact, I heard one of your mentees, Albin, share, we've been waiting for this for a lot of years. So there's a lot of excitement. We have the hackathon coming. We have the pitch coming. We even have this business conference coming February 16th and 17th with Christian Business Fellowship. You want to just mention a little bit about that Impact Conference?
Yeah, this Impact Conference, really, it's part of a broader initiative we have here, again, with this purpose of how do we equip more of Christian, our students, our alumni, and stakeholders in the broader Christian community here close to Cedarville. Mm. How do we equip them to be able to be market leaders, to rise to the top? And so, we do a lot of things with our students where we get to pour in them. We say our core value proposition here is to disciple students spiritually and professionally. Mm. You know, I routinely tell our students, for instance, your platform for ministry in the marketplace is going to be the excellence with which you do your job. If you're excellent at what you do, then people will give you an audience and ask you what, they'll try to figure out what's different about you, right? But the same thing happens to our alums. How do we help them? So the Christian Business Fellowship is going to help us put on conferences, a really high quality content to help them to take their business to the next level. Yes. Or if they're in a business, how they can take their performance within a business to the next level. Again, with that goal of having market leadership, many of us go to conferences to improve our own personal development. And that's what we're talking about. Mm. But we think Cedarville can bring a unique perspective to this because of the integrated biblical worldview and the missional calling that we're trying to do. And we've got a lot of high-powered people. Christian Business Fellowship specifically has a lot of high-powered people and connections that we think this will be a fantastic conference to build each other up. We're looking for some marquee speakers right now which you'll hear about that later, but it's going to be well worth the time for any listener that wants to improve their game to come. Obviously, you can network with people, but you can find like-minded people that might be able to encourage you and help you, and you can maybe have new techniques, new ways of thinking about how you can grow your own business or get to the point where you can have your own business.
And I encourage the listeners to go back two or three episodes. Earl Seals, we had him, the co-executive producer of The Chosen. Mm-hmm. And he's part of CBF. He might have founded it.
He founded Christian Business Fellowship.
That's great. Absolutely. Talk to us, a couple more questions. What do you say to the faculty member or person who says, oh, those entrepreneurs, they're just this small little group of people? What about the entrepreneurial mindset? And that's really what this whole podcast is, that it goes across disciplines. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's critically important. You know, we have a freshman class that you and some of the other faculty and I get to play with, the creative problem solving class. And a principal thing we try to tell everyone in that class is that you have to have this innovative mindset to be able to really handle the rapidity, the rapidly changing world we live in. I mean, things are moving so fast with technology and everything else. We routinely tell students, hey, you're going to change careers 3 or 4 or 5 times, much faster, more frequently than us of our generation did. And it really is true. I mean, AI isn't going to eliminate your job. But other people that are using AI will eliminate your job.
That's right.
So you got to stay abreast with it. How do you be innovative? So we're trying to stretch that process to continually retool. The idea that you should just get a high school diploma and go work for the local steel mill and do the same thing day in and day out for 30 years, first of all, it's pretty boring.
Yeah.
Second of all, it's just not going to happen in the
future.
True. And so we need to, I don't care where you are in the economy, if you are not upskilling constantly, and looking on, scanning the horizon, seeing what's, how do you make yourself more valuable? And really, that's a service. It's not just about you, right? How do I serve others better? If you think I don't have to do anything extra, when I get off the clock at 4 o'clock and it's all my time to go be about me, maybe that's the wrong answer. And so that's a challenge for all of us to think, how can we serve others better?
Oh, that's good. What else would you like to say? Here's your shot. You can talk about, you know, anything related to economics, anything that will be helpful for the e-minded person.
You know, I get discouraged sometimes because I think about, you know, some of the things that are going on. We all do about in the world and politically about how, because it intersects with the market, right? And so we look at the regulatory onslaught that's ongoing, that's happened to discourage and to steer capital towards other resources. I had a quote from my, and I'll probably butcher it a little bit, my former professor, Pete Beck, he used to like to say, and let me preface it by telling you two heroes. The first hero is Adam Smith, the founder of modern economics, who wrote The Wealth of Nations. And then there's a guy named Joseph Schumpeter, who's perhaps the most famous economist who wrote on entrepreneurship. And he had what he called the entrepreneur was creative destroyer or creative destruction. You'll hear that term. And that comes from Schumpeter, because the creative destruction happens when entrepreneurs come up with some new innovation, which puts old ways of doing things out of business.
Like the horse and buggy.
Yeah, the horse and buggy was creative destroyed by the automobile. Yeah. That's the example.
Gotcha.
And the same thing we're seeing right now. Amazon, certainly Walmart ate Kmart, right?
Yeah.
And then Walmart or Amazon is trying to eat Walmart.
Yeah.
Walmart's fighting back. It's kind of interesting, and they're doing better. But that's the kind of creative destruction. Here's the quote he used to say. He says, if the Smithian horse of gains from trade and the Schumpeterian horse of creative destruction can outrun the horse, the government horse of stupidity, we'll be okay.
So
we can't get discouraged when we see these macro trends or bad policies or things like that. We just got to move faster.
Yeah.
And in fact, the entrepreneur is the hero of our story. The entrepreneur is the only thing that's going to be able to innovate through this. You know, I was remarking the other day, and I'll just say this more broadly, Christian Business Fellowship, we're going to part with, they emerged out of Chicago. And I am not a Chicago person. Maybe what I'm saying is wrong, but I think it'll resonate. There's enough truth to it that we'll be amazed. I have always been amazed. How is it that Chicago, which seems to be from the outside, one of the most corrupt cities in America, and yet they make so much money there? How is it that happens? It's not the corruption. Corruption does not lead to making more money. It's what clearly is happening is the entrepreneurs are doing so, they're spinning their wheels so fast. They're able to outrun that government horse of corruption and stupidity in Chicago. I mean, Illinois is perhaps arguably the worst run state in the union. Connecticut or California, fiscally and from an economic perspective, you can look at some of the rankings, American Legislative Exchange.
But you're bringing up a good point. I mean, right now, Elon Musk is in hot water again, but he's constantly innovating. And I get what you're saying. He's a few steps ahead.
Yeah.
Well, talk really quick about your Bereans at the Gate, because we'll put a link in the show notes for this. But that was really a labor of love. What is that? Because we want to point people back to your book and also that.
Okay. Yeah. Brilliance at the Gate is a blog that a few of the other Cedarville faculty and I have put together over the years. We've got to really retool a little bit. We're doing that right now and write more frequently. But the idea is to engage in the political economy issues of our day from a biblical worldview.
Yeah.
What we see right now is really the left and the right. They're talking past each other and really talking, and not just talking past each other, because in many cases, their values are irreconcilable. I get that. But they're not necessarily speaking, even those that are Christians are not necessarily speaking in that space from a Christian worldview. And we want to help people think about that.
Okay.
And so we try to write pithy articles, every week or so.
And your book name?
My book name is No Free Lunch, Economics for a Fallen World. And I have a YouTube site. If you ever wanted to learn economics, an introductory economics course, I have all videos for each chapter. You could just listen to those. Check out a few of them and see if you like that and want to learn more. No free lunch, but economics for a fallen world. Lots of economists make this point of no free lunch, because in economics, that's kind of the principal rule that there's an opportunity cost to every choice. To do one thing is to set aside your other next best alternative, right?
Wow.
So the idea that you can have a free lunch, that's what the government sells all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, we can give you all this free stuff and it's no pain. Well, there's always pain. They may be able to hide the pain.
For it.
Somebody's paying for it.
Yeah.
And it's usually when the market hasn't provided, it's a sure signal that it's probably not profitable in the broader sense.
Yeah. Taxpayers.
Man. Yeah. Taxpayers. So if they can make somebody else pay for a good that some of their constituents benefit, they may do that.
This was amazing. I just want to express some gratitude, because me coming to Cedarville, you know the story, but it was a lifelong dream. And I kind of put that dream aside for a long time, and God resurrected it. So I am thrilled to be here.
Glad to have you.
All right, folks, go follow Dr. Heyman and check out his book and his YouTube. Thanks for being here, and hope you were intellectually stimulated. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the eMind Podcast with Dr. Carrie Oberbrunner. We look forward to hearing from you and how you're applying the eMind. Please share your story by submitting a review on your platform of choice. We read every single one. This podcast is sponsored by Igniting Souls and Cedarville University. Visit ignitingsouls.com/emind and cedarville.edu for more help in your entrepreneurial journey.